poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022, about 40%, give or take. We can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors. Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
By some accounts, the history of animation stretches back to the turn of the 20th century. However, the art finds its roots in antiquity. A 5,200-year-old vase found in Iran's burnt city in the 1970s features a series of five images that researchers have only recently identified as being sequential. Giving it a spin, one would see a goat leaping to snatch leaves from a tree. Fast forward to today, Iranian animations have made significant progress. While the first modern cinematic animations were produced in Iran about a decade ago, thanks to the efforts by Iran's talented youths, the country's animated movies have attracted the attention of a huge number of viewers. The number of high-quality animations has grown compared to previous years in Iran. The new award-winning animated blockbuster Lupetu is a perfect example. The name Lupetu is inspired by a word local people in Kerman province of Iran used to refer to handmade toys that mothers used to make for their children in the past. The animation is about a sanitarium where a doctor treats his mental patients by teaching them to make toys. An unknown culprit vandalizes the creative toy workshop, which is particularly popular among Iranian children, and causes its closure. The doctor's son, Ali, tries to help his father to solve the problem. The process of making the animation took over 3 years. It was ready to be screened in 2020. However, the coronavirus outbreak delayed the screening, and finally, it hit Iran's silver screens from early November 2022. The box office hit is one of the most popular on-screen films of Iranian cinemas right now. It managed to become the most popular movie in Iranian cinemas only within a month and a half of its release in the fall season. Lupetu has also taken part in various national and international festivals. Despite their success, the director of Lupetu says there is no room for complacency, adding, Iranian animation studios should redouble their efforts to keep up with the big names in the industry.
Iran's animation industry is progressing. It's perfect that children can watch this animation in the cinemas. But we have a long way to go. We should produce more high-quality cinematic animations to keep up with foreign animations.
Lupetu's producers say it will soon be screened in other countries, with Turkey and Russia showing interest to screen the animation in their cinemas.
Several high-quality cinematic animations have been made in Iran in recent years, and Lupetu is one of them. The blockbuster animation's success testifies that Iran has made significant progress that puts it on a par with big names in the industry.
In order to avoid paying billions of dollars in fines, it appears that the Pakistani government is attempting to find a solution for the completion of an Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project. This comes after Pakistani lawmakers demanded progress on the publicly funded project and warned that Pakistan could face a penalty if the pipeline project with Iran is not completed before the year end. The Petroleum Ministry officials warn that Pakistan will have to pay $18 billion as a fine if it terminates Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline agreement. The officials told lawmakers that Islamabad has spoken to the United States to request a waiver as there is a ban on importing gas from Iran. The parliamentarians asked the Pakistani Ministry of Foreign Affairs to summon the American envoy and demand that he either grant Islamabad permission to move forward with the project or provide funding to cover the fine. Washington has been pushing Islamabad to give up the plan to import gas from neighboring Iran. However, the government has so far publicly resisted the pressure, arguing that the project is vital to fulfill the country's energy needs.
We should revive the Iran-Pakistan pipeline. That is the key. And we also demand the lifting of sanctions which have been imposed by certain Western countries against Iran, because the sanctions are wrong, they are unjust, and they are immoral. And Iran, like Pakistan, is a peaceful country. They want to strengthen regional relations.
Like the rest of the world, Pakistan is no exception to the global energy crisis, which is worsening each passing day. Experts believe that pending gas pipeline project with Iran could be an immediate remedy to overcome the energy needs in Pakistan if the country manages to get out of the U.S. influence.
Because of the U.S. Importance in foreign relations, Pakistan has always been pressurized by the United States not to increase its trade with Iran and not to negotiate any agreements with Iran. Unfortunately, Pakistan has yielded to that pressure. Pakistan is importing gas from Qatar and other countries, Azerbaijan even, and why not import gas from Iran, which is cheaper than from so many other countries.
In 2009, the gas companies of both Pakistan and Iran signed an agreement under which Islamabad committed to building an 800-kilometer pipeline to the Iranian border by the end of 2014. However, due to the U.S. pressure, Islamabad could not fulfill its commitment. Iran has already finished a portion of the pipeline in its own territory from the gas field to the Pakistan border, where it should connect to the Pakistani part.
The call on the Pakistani government to step up efforts to complete Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project comes as Islamabad is already grappling with several crises here at home. Avoiding this $18 billion penalty could save the country from falling into another one. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrian political parties, along with Syria-based Palestinian factions, have gathered in Arnous Square in Damascus, calling on the U.S. and its Western allies to lift economic sanctions on Syria. Speakers said this Western siege on Syria is inhumane and requires urgent actions by the international community, considering that people in Syria are dealing with deteriorating economic conditions following the recent earthquakes.
We express our anger over the unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. Syrians suffered a lot as a result of such unjust and inhumane actions. Not lifting them is a crime against humanity. We call on the U.N. to shoulder its responsibilities and try to get such sanctions lifted.
We reiterate our support for Syria and reject the unjust seizure act, which led to shortages in basic needs. We call on the U.S. to stop looting Syria's resources and get out of the Arab country. We also call on Arab and Islamic nations to stand beside Syrians dealing with crises. We call on the Arab League to give Syria's seat back to the country.
Participants raised Syrian and Palestinian flags as well as banners asking for an end to the decades-long bans that have deprived them of their basic needs and resulted in a surge of food and medicine prices.
This is an unjust siege. We as Syrians are suffering from this siege in all aspects of our daily lives, starting from transportation, because the bans have caused a lack of fuel as well as shortage in medicine and also high food prices. All that is because of the imperial blockade.
Life changed so much following the sanctions. Prices went high. People are searching for their basic needs. This siege caused a shortage of so many basic commodities. We call on the world to do something and help us.
The recent earthquakes have further worsened the already deteriorating economic and humanitarian situation in Syria. The UN says even before the earthquake tragedy, 70% of the population needed humanitarian assistance due to the war on the country. One challenge after another, Syrians endured so many hardships in the past decade that made living a normal life a daily challenge. U.S. and EU sanctions exacerbated their suffering, and they demand an end to such injustice. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, has said that there is, quote, great expectations about his ongoing talks with Iranian officials over issues concerning their cooperation. The remarks sent a positive signal on the course of cooperation between the agency and Tehran. That positive assessment was also echoed by Mohammad Islami, head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization.
The Islamic Republic will in no way compromise on its national interests and its national security. These meetings show Tehran and the IAEA maintain a professional relationship based on trust, and that we attach great importance to abiding by the IAEA safeguards.
Islami added that IAEA reports have confirmed that Iran has not enriched uranium beyond 60% and that issues regarding claims that some uranium particles have been found in undeclared sites in Iran have been resolved. Grossi, for his part, said that the discussions are being held in an atmosphere of honesty and cooperation. Asked to comment on claims that IAEA has adopted a political approach towards Iran, he insisted that the agency is not a political tool for any country.
The IAEA has not been and will never be a political tool of anybody. I, as Director General, I am independent. I am under no country's instructions. And we act in a way that is very transparent. Member states have a board of governors. Every step we take is scrutinized, and I think that what is important is to work together, as the Vice President was saying, work on the cooperation, which is very important, on peaceful uses, work on the observance of the comprehensive safeguard agreements, and all the rest is speculation.
Grossi was also asked by reporters present in the presser to comment on the Israeli regime's total lack of accountability regarding its nuclear weapons program. Grossi said that there are limitations to the agency's inspections of those that have not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
That being said, let me conclude this important question by saying that every country in the world should be party, should be a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty.
The visit appears to have helped improve relations between Iran and the IAEA, particularly scientific and technical collaboration between them. The two officials said that Iran's annual nuclear science conference, which has so far been held on a national level, will be upgraded to an international conference from next year.
Both sides have expressed satisfaction with the talks, and Mr. Grossi himself has called the atmosphere positive, which could pave the way for the revival of the nuclear deal. Gizumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022, about 40%, give or take. We can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors. Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshiping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has once again agreed to commit itself to cooperating with the International Atomic Energy Agency. IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi, after visiting Iran and returning to Vienna, said that both sides understand the importance of positive engagements in paving the way for wider agreements. However, the director of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, has said that Tehran won't give in to Washington's maximum pressure campaign and attempts to pressure the country through the UN nuclear watchdog. Well, what does all of this mean? Stay with me on the spotlight so we can look at the significance of all of this. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Elijah McNair, journalist and political analyst out of Brussels. And Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector out of Bethlehem, New York. Well, thank you both for being with me. And start this off in Brussels. And Elijah, your thoughts. How significant do you think Grossi's recent visit to Iran and the comments that both sides have made afterwards? How significant is it overall?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
I think it's extremely significant because it de-escalates the tension between Europe, the United States, and Iran and the agency. Because Iran took several steps just to send a clear message to the U.S. that the nuclear deal should be on the table, should be respected, and there is a need for all parties to return to it. And any step that is taken by the U.S., imposing more sanctions on Iran or keeping the harsh sanctions, it means Iran will have to escalate, keeping in mind that since 2015, when the JCPOA was agreed, the U.S. did not respect fully the agreement. And in 2018, the Americans left the agreement. And for Iran to start coming out of the agreement, it took a full year until 2019. And only when Biden took the power, then Iran started to increase the enrichment uranium. For the main request of Iran for the IAEA to remain professional and to keep its professionalism, not to be involved in politics. And I think Iran was referring to the November announcement of Rafael Grossi when he said he was concerned about Iranian hypersonic missiles. This is not the job of the IAEA to monitor Iranian missiles, but to monitor the enrichment uranium and to make sure that Iran is abiding by agreement. So when Grossi said he's neither pessimistic or optimistic, this is a very huge step. It means that all the call of the European countries involved in the JCPOA that were calling to escalate against Iran is frozen at the moment until the final decision is reached following Grossi's report.
Okay, what about you, Scott? How do you see this latest move or this action that is taking place right now between Iran and the IAEA? You heard what Elijah said, that he felt that it was very significant. Do you agree that it is significant, and do you agree that it can help calm tensions or not?
No, I believe this is significant. It's what I would call escalation management by the Iranians. They've, of course, taken a very hardline principled stand on the allowing the United States back into the JCPOA. And there were the termination of those talks, or at least the cessation of those talks, has caused problems and created uncertainty in Vienna, especially amongst the European participants in this agreement. And there are several unresolved issues that are well known. Grossi and the Iranian side have talked about this. And if these unresolved issues were left to percolate on their own, it would just complicate what I believe is Iran wants, which is the United States to indeed return under the conditions set forth by Iran. There are some complicated back-channel discussions apparently taking place between Iran and the United States. And the last thing either the Americans or the Iranians need is for the IAEA to be escalating tension by further sanctioning, further calling out of Iran. So these talks, as the gentleman from Brussels indicated, they put a freeze on that pressure. They put it on hold.
Well, Scott, let me just jump in with what you just said. You talked about that the last thing that would be needed, according to you, that there's some talks being that are taking place. But you said that the last thing needed would be the IAEA to sanction, for example, Iran, and hindering the possibilities of things moving forward. Do you think that the IAEA really works independently of the United States to make such a decision on its own?
The IAEA works on momentum, and right now the momentum is generated by unresolved issues. And so these take on a life of their own. And as I said, left unresolved, this momentum will go forward and cause an increase in tensions. And I also believe that the United States is engaged in back channel talks. It's been denied, but there's apparent reason to believe that this is indeed the case. So the United States would be sending signals, discrete signals, to the IAEA and to Vienna to allow the Grossi talks to go forward and to create the opportunity to freeze on this. Nothing happens in isolation, but I think it's in the United States' interest to have this issue stabilized and not spin out of control.
Of course, Elijah, from the Iranian government side, we know that so far they said without the United States changing its MO, it is not interested in actually talking with the United States and dealing with the JCPOA in that frame with them. But in general, do you think that the IAEA can be an honest broker when dealing with Iran, Elijah?
What is important is to see both sides. From the Iranian side, Iran needs some trustful indication from the IAEA. When we hear Grossi talking about the Iranian missiles, this is not his job. He's sending very strong message to Iran to say, well, I'm not that neutral and I am not really not taking a side. And because there is a deal and is signed by both parties, there is no need for trust. And when we see the deal is broken by one side, it means the trust is completely absent. So it is the right of Iran to feel and to understand that the IAEA, that is an international organization under the control of the United Nations, means it is also under the control of the United States and other Western allies, because they were the driving force to push the IAEA to go to Iran, to put pressure on Iran and say, well, we have an independent job. The problem is it is not in the capability of the IAEA to establish this trust with Iran, because there is no trust with the U.S. and because the U.S. left the JCPOA and European did not respect their end of the bargain. So trust is absent. Therefore, it is in the right of Iran to think that Rafael Grossi at the end of the day is not someone who is completely neutral and professional, and Iran to walk very cautiously with Grossi, particularly when he said, we want the return of the camera to operate and have access. And the Iranian said, well, all the chips and all the films are there, but we abide by the decision of our council, and you will have it at the end of the negotiation when everything returned to normality. So Iran is saying, why should I abide by the West's request when the West is not doing anything and is not holding the end of the deal on its side?
What about that, Scott? I mean, from the Iranian perspective, they've seen a lot of different things. For example, questioning even the independence of the IAEA, have seen information, critical information that it has been shared, apparently, for example, with Israel. So with that scenario, in your perspective, I mean, how can this move forward? What can happen? What needs to happen?
What needs to happen is what's happening. I don't think anybody should be under any illusions that Iran views the IAEA as a truly independent actor. They know the history of the IAEA. They know the role played by the IAEA. They know the pressure that the IAEA has put under from the United States and others. They also understand diplomacy. They understand the need for back channels and front channels, and sometimes those channels operate at the same time. And right now, Iran, I believe, has a back channel of communications with the United States that needs to remain out of no sunlight because of the delicate nature, the politically sensitive nature of the topics. And so we have the front channel, Grossi. Grossi would not have gone to Iran without the permission of the United States. Grossi's itinerary was approved by the United States, and Grossi is reporting back to the United States. But this is a channel designed to create stability. It's not meant to be something separate from the other negotiations. They're part and parcel of the same thing, but diplomacy sometimes requires multiple tracks.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Elijah, Iran may allow the cameras to roll again inside various facilities. Of course, this is after talks go forward and possible agreements are made. I mean, your overall thoughts about that possibility. Do you see Iran going beyond its responsibilities, or no? Is it just doing the bare minimum? How do you assess all of this?
We have two sides. The side of the Iranian saying, I want to return to JCPOA and I will abide by all its articles. And we have the other side saying, I can't offer any guarantee that further sanctions are not going to be imposed on you again. This is what Iran is asking, for the guarantee that Biden not only failed to provide, but has increased from 3,600 sanctions imposed on Iran, and he added several hundred additional sanctions. This is not someone with a good faith and who want to return to JCPOA. Therefore, there is no need and there is no reason for the U.S. to return to JCPOA as long as Iran is saying, I am not making the nuclear bomb. So why would any U.S. president who is looking after and protecting his dominance of the world, release dozens of billions of dollars frozen in the Western banks, society, companies, and countries that belong to Iran for Iran become stronger. There's no U.S. president that's going to do that as long as Iran is saying, I'm not making the bomb. So what Iran is doing, Iran is showing concession after concession and taking a harsh step in retaliation. So it's always on the defense, never took the initiative to attack and respond to the position that was taken by President Trump in 2018. So it went gradually, telling the West, I am going to escalate if you continue. And the West really doesn't care. So saying the cameras will roll again, or we keep all the funds until we reach an agreement, is a showing good faith from Iran that the West is not going to take on board.
So let me stay with you, Elijah, pick up on what you've just said. So you're saying, because if we look at your statement, you're saying because Iran is saying it's not making the nuclear bomb, that there's no reason for the U.S. to really negotiate. Well, from the very beginning, Iran said, in the very beginning of all of this, it has said continuously that it is not after nuclear bomb or nuclear weapons, that actually the leader of the Islamic Revolution has said it is forbidden, as a matter of fact, for Iran to create the bomb. So with that being said, according to your premise, then how did we get here? Because if it's true that they're not going to do anything either way, then what was all of this about to begin with?
It is about Iran's influence in the Middle East. It is about Iran establishing allies in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, where it is spoiling the U.S. and Israel plan. And President Obama tried, President Biden, President Trump tried also to include other dossiers rather than keeping only very strict on the nuclear dossier, because they want Iran to lift its hand on its allies in the Middle East and violate its own constitution to protect and support all the oppressed people in the world. So by this behavior, what the West calls the malign behavior of Iran, and they really are pointing out to that, they just don't consider the several tens of U.S. military bases surrounding Iran and established all over in the Middle East and Central Asia. So this is the main problem, is Iran nuclear peaceful program, but is above all it Iranian drones, Iranian precision missiles, and its support to its allies. This is what is the problem that is created today between Iran and the West.
Scott, what about that? Is this all about just putting pressure on Iran for Iran basically not to support its allies in the region, to change the overall perspective of the Islamic Republic? Is it all just an excuse?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that American policy towards Iran is not driven by logic, but by emotion. And at the root of it, of course, is the takeover of the U.S. embassy and holding Americans hostage. And I know that was a long time ago, but it resonates deeply with almost every American. I also think that we can't give short shrift to Israel's concerns. Israel's interpretation of Iran's nuclear program is any enrichment capability whatsoever constitutes a nuclear capability. And that's why Israel insists on zero enrichment. And now that Iran's taken it up to over 60% enrichment, they are literally months away from being able to enrich highly enriched uranium. And even though Iran has said that they won't do this, this is in violation of, Islamic law. There's a fatwa against it. That doesn't make the Israelis feel any more comfortable. And the United States can't ignore Israeli concerns. But from the American perspective, too, I think we're looking at that there's a growing realization about the nexus between China, Russia, and Iran, that this troika of nations that are being increasingly isolated by the United States and Europe have found a way to come together, join with the rest of the world to create sort of a center of gravity that's independent of American and European influence, and this is very problematic. And so I do see the United States having an interest in trying to improve relations with Iran, to keep Iran connected to the West, to help slow down Iran's eastward transition. So it's a very complicated topic. I believe that nuclear issues are very much part of it, but Iran's regional presence is, as the gentleman said, Elijah said, the alleged malign activities are there. But I also think there's this new element, this new global reality based on BRICS and economics, et cetera, and the need by many in the United States to keep Iran from totally jumping ship, to find some mechanism to keep Iran engaged with the West. And the JCPOA would be that mechanism.
Well, Scott, just keeping in line with what you're saying, that because of this troika, this nexus that is taking place, the United States wants better relations with Iran. But the United States has continued to sanction Iran time after time again. So what does that mean? On the one hand, your analysis, you're saying that they do not want Iran to make this move to the east. But on the other hand, so not only did Trump leave the JCPOA, Biden has not returned to it. And during Biden's presidency, we have seen more sanctions against Iran. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, I think what it means is this is a policy of, hey, very much in transition, and we're in the early stages of this transition, and it's a policy that may never gain traction. You know, all the things you mentioned took place prior to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. If you don't think the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what has happened in the global scene has influenced every aspect of American policy, then I would say that you're probably misinformed about American policy. We're concerned about China. We're concerned about a nexus between Russia and China. And now you have the added factor of Iran being driven into that company. So I believe that there are people right now in the Biden administration, in the national security establishment, that are concerned about this. This is a new development. But I do believe this is why you don't see the United States simply walk away from the JCPOA. This is why I believe that you see the United States still working behind the scenes to get the JCPOA up and running, because in their belief that would keep Iran engaged with the West in a potentially constructive manner and slow down and hopefully at some point in time stop the drift to the Russian-Chinese new center of gravity.
Hmm. Elijah, I saw you shaking your heads. Your thoughts on those comments?
I'm not sure the U.S. is really concerned and still interested in the JCPOA. I think the U.S. is concerned to make sure that this is not going to be the time when Iran is going to make a nuclear bomb while Biden is in power. So as long as Biden is there, he doesn't want to be remembered as the one who pushed Iran toward making nuclear weapons, because simply the U.S. doesn't believe in fatwa or in what the Grand Ayatollah Imam Khamenei said about is forbidden. They think, well, Iran has reached 60%. It means we are several months away from the 90%.
Elijah, do you really believe that the United States believe that?
Oh, yeah. The United States believes that Iran can go toward the nuclear weapon, and it is just enough for the Grand Ayatollah Khamenei to say, generally speaking, all fatwas can be revoked. Then we will see a completely different behavior from the United States saying, well, now the nuclear weapon is on the Iranian table, and then we have to behave differently. But as long as the U.S. saying, well, we listen to what the Iranian are saying, we control them through the IAEA, we make sure that they're not going beyond the 60%. They all jump when they saw only residue of 84, not an enrichment to 84, 83.7%.
Okay.
So I think the objective is to make sure that this is not going to be a nuclear military weapon in Iran during the Biden administration. This is the only Biden's concern today.
Okay, and let me just turn to Scott, because I only have a couple of minutes left. Sorry, Elijah. Scott, you mentioned that this the U.S. and trying to get closer to Iran. But on the other hand, we talked about the Israeli factor and how Israel is very concerned about Iran and attaining a nuclear bomb, of course, that we've been hearing out of Tel Aviv for a long time right now. But at the other hand, we know that the Israelis actually possess nuclear weapons. So how does all of this fit in? On the one hand, we have the IAEA here talking about Iran and making sure that they abide by their agreements that they've gone beyond. On the other hand, you're talking about the U.S. wanting to get close to Iran, of course, but under the control, or at least they're following the Israeli line. So at the end of the day, what does it all mean?
Well, it means that nuclear nonproliferation policy is in a flux. I mean, the inherent contradictions where Iran is a signatory to the nonproliferation treaty and has been abiding by all of its obligations under the nonproliferation treaty. The United States is seeking to impose obligations beyond the nonproliferation treaty on Iran while receiving pressure from Israel, who hasn't signed the nonproliferation treaty, won't sign the nonproliferation treaty, and has pursued an independent nuclear weapons program. There's just absolute illogic in this. So it's very difficult to find some sort of path toward consistency, which is why everything we're talking about today is so frustrating, because it's not black and white. It's very, you know, numerous shades of gray. But again, now we come back to the original thing. That's why I think the discussion between Grossi and the Iranians is important, because it does provide, you know, some foundation of stability upon which hopefully, you know, a logical progression towards a resolution of this problem can be reached.
Okay.
But it's very complicated.
All right. And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on Spotlight. Out of Brussels, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst. Out of Bethlehem, New York, Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید. ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, we discussed the election of Abul Hassan Bani Sadr as the first Iranian president and also talked about the events leading to his dismissal. This time, we are going to touch upon the period between Bani Sadr's escape from the country and the election of martyr Muhammad Ali Rajai as the second president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Stay tuned, please. The period of mid-June till mid-August 1981 was the time when Abul Hassan Bani Sadr was deposed of presidency and Muhammad Ali Rajai was elected as the second president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Bani Sadr was dismissed due to his mismanagement as the president, particularly in the field of administration of the war as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Many important events occurred during this period. The martyrdom of Dr. Mustafa Chamran was one of these events. He was one of the brave commanders of the war and had devoted his life to the cause of Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution since he was in the U.S. as a student or a guerrilla combatant in Lebanon. The news of his martyrdom was very sad for the Iranian people. Imam Khomeini's wife was dumbfounded at hearing the news. Ms. Khadija Saghafi had said on Chamran, "Chamran was a mythical man. What we hear about him may be unbelievable for the next generations." A few days after Chamran's martyrdom, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was injured in a terrorist act while speaking at Abu Zar Mosque in the south of Tehran. He was Imam Khomeini's representative at the Supreme Defense Council, a member of the Islamic Assembly Council or Parliament, and the leader of Friday Congregational Prayer in Tehran. He was the person who had mentioned some of the points of political incompetency of Bani Sadr at the Parliament. Just one day after this act of terror, some 72 officials were martyred in a bomb blast at the place of the Islamic Republic Party. The judiciary chief of the time, Ayatollah Muhammad Hosseini Beheshti, was the highest official who lost his life during the explosion. The blast was carried out by the MKO terrorist grouplet, which killed more than 17,000 people, mostly innocent men, women, and children. The imposed war, successive martyrdom of the companions of Imam Khomeini, economic shortages and criminal acts of terrorist outfits such as the MKO could not impact Imam Khomeini's iron willpower and firm belief in God. On the contrary, he kept calling on people to put their trust in God and resist against the enemies of Islam and Iran. In such circumstances, some people were seeking to attribute mythical acts and extraordinary measures to the Imam, but the Imam's wife blocked the way of such superstitions and the likely consequences. During a meeting with some of the ladies from various walks of life, one of the attendees asked for some miracles from Imam Khomeini. The Imam's wife answered, "One of the miracles of the Imam is that I have never heard a lie from him during living with him. Another miracle of him is that he never dissipates a single rial, Iranian currency. His third miracle is that he seriously avoids extravagance. The last miracle is that, unlike many mystics who shun people, the Imam believes in people. He expects miracle from people and believes that people can work a miracle." Then she read out part of the Imam's words where he had said, "It is a miracle that you, sisters and brothers together, with one sound and clenched fist, have stood against satanic powers. This is the miracle of Islam, which has been manifested in you. This is a miracle that the martyrdom of a dear one stirs up a wave in the world. This is a miracle that ladies do not fear against tanks, cannons, and machine guns." Dear listeners, it is very interesting to know how martyr Ayatollah Beheshti was careful of every minute point within the domain of his responsibility. For instance, while Bani Sadr had gone into hiding after this missile, his wife was arrested on a street. She was provoking people through chanting slogans in favor of her husband. Ayatollah Beheshti, being informed of the event, phoned the prosecutor general and told him with discontent, "Although we have differences with Bani Sadr, His allegations have not been proved in any just court yet, and even if they are proved, no one is allowed to insult or violate the rights of his wife. Thus, Bani Saad's wife should be freed in less than 24 hours. If this does not happen, I will do the job personally as the judiciary chief. Dear listeners, Martyr Beheshti said these words while Bani Saad had left no stone unturned in calumniating him and insulting him here and there. Imam Khomeini, as soon as hearing what Martyr Beheshti's statements read, said, "Mr. Beheshti is right. If that lady has been arrested for this purpose and she has no other allegation, she should be freed right now. Moreover, they should offer an apology to her too." Ahmad Agha was happy with the political piety of Ayatollah Beheshti, and he described it to her mother. Lady Saghafi told him on Martyr Beheshti, "This man should be appreciated. Thank him on my behalf." The Imam's wife went to Bani Saad's wife several times and, in spite of being upset with Bani Saad, never spoke behind her in any party.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.